Hi, today's April 22nd, 2017. This is Mowgli's Podcast 203. I'm Tyler Gossaward, my good friend John Westfall. And we don't think this is going to be a long podcast, and you're probably cheering, but to our fives of listeners, we hope you'll enjoy it anyway.
But we've got some rants, at least one for me, and Todd might have one too. So.
Yeah. So the first one is not a rant. It's kind of interesting, actually. So those of you who've used the Google Earth, various Google Earth apps, might be interested to know that you can find it on the web now at earth.google.com/web. And it's pretty cool. It's got 3D buildings and all. Most of the things you would expect visually from Earth. I don't know if you can upload a KML file or an Esri shape file and then display it, overlay it over the map. But it's pretty cool just to kind of look at the aerial 3D view of various places, including my hometown. So earth.google.com/web. Go check it out. It's, as usual, it's from Google. It's free. It's pretty cool.
Don't try to use it in anything other than Chrome, though.
Oh, good point. Good point.
Yeah, it does not load in anything other than Chrome.
Good point. I assume you tried it, John, in Safari.
I just tried opening it, and it told me, go away. You're not using Chrome.
You're not using a good browser.
Yeah. Use a better browser.
And, of course, you know, I suspect Edge and IE would be the same. Of course, you know, Microsoft doesn't even render correctly on both browsers sometimes, so from their own products.
Can't get their own products to render properly on their own products. Yeah. So
it's pretty amazing. Okay, and speaking of Microsoft, now this caused quite a bit of consternation amongst folks. So they bought Wunderlist, WNDER list, about a year ago maybe? And it was a much, I don't know if I call it beloved, but it was a much appreciated list app, and they launched a version of it, a preview version of it called Microsoft To Do, TO-DO, which you can find at, I think it's todo.microsoft.com, and some people are saying it's underpowered, doesn't have all the stuff Wunderlist does. I looked at it, I kind of said, meh, but, you know, it's Microsoft, it's kind of part of their Office family, I think it links with Outlook tasks, so I took a 3-minute look. You should take a look, John.
I haven't looked yet. It was the linking with Outlook tasks that I wasn't sure if it did or not, because I've recently started. I used to use a couple of third-party list apps, and I've recently moved everything to just most of the things I do that work just fine. What I need, though, is something to do that syncing between Exchange and like a web client or something like that. So I don't know if To-Do will do that. But I would be very interested in how going back to Micro in terms of my to-do lists.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of looking at.
So I'm actually on the website right now and sort of playing with, and there's an import option.
Yeah.
But it imports to-do list and wonder list. Oh, wait, actually, it did have something in there about. When you import your list, they'll also be available in other Microsoft products such as Exchange and Outlook tasks. Now, you see, I do unifying its family of things. I really do like their approach, understanding that people will have personal OneDrives and work OneDrives.
Yeah.
And making those a little bit accessible, move around on the apps on your phone and those sorts of things. So I've actually started using, because I just happen to have more free OneDrive space than Dropbox space, I've used OneDrive a little bit more over the last 6 months for my personal syncing needs and a little bit less on Dropbox. So.
Yeah. And if I didn't say before, todo.microsoft.com is where you go. You need a Microsoft login to sign in. And for Wunderlist fans, apparently they're going to shut down, or if may have already shut down Wunderlist. So sorry about that. You know, it joins Sunrise, Acompli, and other things people loved in a pasture somewhere where these apps are grazing.
Hopefully, yes,
in peace.
And all the things that Google bought that they then killed, and all the things that
don't get us started. We should do a whole
Apple
podcast.
Apple bought and then killed. Yeah, if you look at Apple, Google, and Microsoft combined, all three of them are responsible for more app deaths than I think anyone else.
Yeah. Oh, and I should also mention, I'm just looking at the To-Do site. It says Microsoft To-Do is available for free and syncs across iPhone, Android, Windows 10 and the web, so you don't even need a mobile device. You can just use it on the web. Microsoft.com. Okay, at any rate, that's all I have to say about that since I really didn't play with it very much. And I think it's because I use to-do lists in a different way than most people. I think most people have like a literal to-do list. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to trim the, you know, hedges and go buy milk and things like that. And once it's done, you really don't care if, you know, once you complete the task. But I like to have a history of tasks. What did I do when? Especially when I have things in, you know, various stages of completion, they're multi-part related tasks that need to be done. You know, like a little mini project kind of thing. But anyway,
I actually have been, since Exchange Tasks will sync to your iPhone, mm-hmm. and IFTTT can access iPhone reminders, mm-hmm. and I use Day One as my journal/diary app.
I remember you mentioned that, yeah.
I actually have a little IFTTT recipe that will, every time I check off something on my to-do, it enters it into Day One.
Oh, so that's nice. Back.
Yeah, that is it kind of gets exactly to what you're looking for. Yeah. So,
yeah, and what I do is much simpler and requires much less thinking and knowledge. I have a checkbox list on Evernote, and every year I create a new file, and you know, so I have a list of 2017 tasks that it started on January 1 and it's going to go on until December 31st, and then I'll archive it. But anyway, next up is something John noted, and I took a quick look at, and I don't know. I don't know how good it is, but well, you want to talk about it, John?
And it's a pretty brief sort of thing. Basically, the internets this week found it very interesting that Steve Ballmer has gotten involved with an open data website, basically usafacts.org. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was just nice because, as we sort of have talked about in the past, it's frustrating that more of the old guard tech gurus haven't thought about open access to things as being more powerful than proprietary and closed. So anytime we get one over on the open side, I'm happy about that.
Okay, I see your point now. Just the fact that the guy who called open source a cancer
is looking at
open data, which is semi-related, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what were your thoughts?
Well, you know, I found that interesting. Probably not as interesting as you, because I think it was under when Ballmer was still there. They actually opened an open source lab. So I could see his migration towards, or not migration, but his change in his thinking of open source and open data and that sort of thing, or at least his acceptance of it. So it didn't hit me that hard. I found it interesting that, you know, we now need patrons of the data, so to speak, to maintain things like this. And so apparently, I read one of the articles about Steve Ballmer's USAFacts.org, and which he funded, I think personally funded. And he created it because he thought this already existed, couldn't find the data he wanted, and decided that the world needed something like this, where you could find various facts and figures from government data and various things. But, you know, when I looked at it, and I guess I should have known this, but I can't really find data past 2015. Part of it is the way governments release data. It's pretty slow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that might be part of it. The other part might be it's just hard to find new data, even if it exists. But if you look at crime facts or education or, you know, various categories available on usafacts.org, there is no data newer than 2015 as far as I've found so far. And I've only sampled it. You know, I haven't looked for everything, of course. It's impossible. But the few things I looked at, I couldn't find any data that's, you know, newer than 2 years old. Mm-hmm. Which is, like I said, that the way government releases data, that's not unusual.
No, it isn't. But it's frustrating for those of us that like playing with data.
Yeah, yeah. And I couldn't, the other thing is, and maybe I just don't know how to do it, I couldn't figure out a way to find data just for my state. It was mm-hmm. all U.S. nationwide data. And I thought I read you could find it by state, but if you can, I couldn't figure it out. I don't know if you played with it any.
I have not played with it other than just reading about it and going, oh, that's kind of cool. So that was where I was at with it.
But at any rate, glad that Steve Ballmer did this.
Steve Jobs doing it would be really interesting.
That would be awesome. And again, I find it interesting that we now need patrons to get these kind of projects going, because, you know, it's I don't know. Where would have this been in the past? Nowhere, apparently, because Ballmer didn't find it. But I guess it's good that we have patrons that do this kind of thing, like Wikipedia, which goes to the public for its funds, and this one, which Ballmer is funding, and archive.org, which I think Amazon bought, or Bezos personally bought. I don't know which it is. Okay, now next up, I'm just going to sit back and let John rant on this one.
Well, this is getting to something that I've actually talked about on and off on this podcast since the very first time I was on this podcast, on podcast 69, back on December 21st, 2013. At that time, I talked about a product called Coin. Coin was this little, looked like a credit card, but it had a little e-ink screen. And it allowed you to read in multiple credit cards, and then it would have a reprogrammable magnetic stripe that would basically report that card to whatever POS terminal you were sliding it through. And everyone that I talked to at that time, and even people who weren't relative geeks, thought, well, that sounds great because I carry around like 5 or 6 cards, and I don't want to have to carry all those. And so I'll just use this. Coin had a bit of trouble. They did a lot of fundraising around December 2013, saying they would ship in summer of 14. They ended up not shipping until more like end of 14, early 15, and then their product was really flaky and didn't work all that well. I got mine. I was not too thrilled with it because I couldn't actually get it to work in some places. I remember that. So I thought, well, I'm not going to use this because it doesn't work that well. And then in podcast 161 on May 22nd of last year, we talked about how Fitbit bought Coin. And yes. So Coin was effectively dead. Fitbit bought their tech and killed them. Well, in the meantime, others decided that this was a cool idea. One of them was a company called Plastic, P-L-A-S-T-C. And Plastic actually decided they were going to build the same sort of device, except they were going to have an e-ink screen that was the full size of the length of the credit card information so that it would display the number and all the things that you would actually want. Coin just had a little screen in the upper right. They had prototypes that had different kinds of, you know, charging and all this other stuff. They were releasing blog updates regularly on their production status up until the end of probably last year, early this year. And last summer, when Fitbit bought out Coin, they offered a deal to Coin holders to basically get a discount on theirs. And I thought at the time, well, why not? This sounds cool. I'm a geek. I'll drop, at that point, $150 on Plastic. Yeah,
I remember I thought it was kind of expensive.
Yeah, well, I've gambled on a few these sorts of things in the past, and I can say my crowdfunding / backing record is usually pretty good. I've only had two things burn me in the past, one of which is still technically not dead, so I might get something someday for it. But anyway, Plastic this week sent an email to all of their they've used the term backers, but we're not really backers, we're pre-orderers. And it was quite fitting that I was reading that email while I was on what some call the porcelain throne. And at that email, they said, we lost our last bid for venture capital funding, and we don't have enough money to continue, so we're filing for Chapter 7, and we're never going to ship cards.
Oh.
Yeah. And absolutely nothing in their email about anything about their precious backers. It was just like, sorry, folks, we're done. So, I probably am out $150. When it goes through Chapter 7, you know, and everything gets liquidated, right, they be able to do partial refunds or something, but that's all too premature to ask. I just figure I'm out $150 at this point, and annoyed about that, as pretty much anyone would be. But it got me thinking a little bit about how payments have changed over the last 3 years since we originally talked about this. Mm-hmm. And I carry a very slim wallet that has in it at any given time a debit card / ATM card, a couple of credit cards, a couple of forms of ID, and then cash, and maybe like a loyalty card for my local coffee shop, that sort of thing. So five or six things, and it's just a little slim clip is actually the name of the wallet. Little metal thing that has a money clip on one side and a credit card holder on the other. And I thought, you know, my ultimate goal would be that since I already carry my phone and my Apple Watch, that just I could do electronic payments for everything if I'm not paying cash. I don't really, you know, credit cards are not all that secure. Even chip and PIN and chip and sign and all that, that's not much more secure. My Discover credit card this week was, or actually last week, was compromised, or I have no idea how compromised it was. I just got an email from Discover going, hey, yeah, we're sending you a new card with a new number and nothing to be alarmed about. Just, you know, just so you know, it's on its way and your old card won't work in, you know, after May 2nd or something along
and
that line.
Did you see a $10,000 charge? Yeah.
Yeah, let us know. But we, you know, of course, every time that this has happened with Discover card, I've never been held accountable. I've never lost any money on credit card personally, thankfully. But with my Discover card, I've been a Discover card holder since 2002, and this is probably the fifth time that it's been somewhat compromised and they've had to send me a new number. And I have another credit card with another company that I think it's been two times, and I've had that card since 2002. So really, I would not really hate a world where all I carry with me is some cash, because I still think you need actual currency. I know I'm weird on that. Mm-hmm. A phone and your physical ID. But the pesky credit cards just kind of get stolen, compromised. They get in the way, you know.
Maybe I'll say
one for a while, but I'd rather have everything just go. It's already electronic anyway. When you slide your credit card, it already gets processed just like an electronic payment.
Yeah.
But the physical cards seem to be still a good point of attack.
Right. And just to give you a N equals 2 sample size, my Discover card has been and I've had it for, I don't know, a long time. And I've had it compromised many times longer than you, I should say, probably since 1990 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But more recently, in the past 5 or 6 years, it's been compromised 3 times. So once every 2 years for me. Yours looks like once every 3 years, which is, I think, within statistical error.
yeah.
But what it's...
Well, if I limit to the last 5 years, it's probably been 3 times in the last 5 years.
Yeah,
so
you know, not to disparage Discover card, but we think you've got a problem with your security.
And the last card they sent me, this new card, it still has my custom card design, but all the card information is on the back of the card now. It's not even on the front of the card.
Yeah.
And that seems to be, and it's not embossed anymore, of course. The last time I actually saw a knuckle buster to do a credit card embossing was when I worked in retail in 2000, and I had to use them like 5 times in the year 2000 that our regular credit card readers weren't working. So I don't really think we need embossed numbers as much as we once did. But yeah, it's interesting that this is a problem, and I think the solution is if you're going to have two vectors of attack, electronic and physical, if you can eliminate the physical vector, then you can focus more on securing the electronic.
Yeah, and I wonder how common it is in other countries to use a credit card versus cash versus I don't know what. I know, and I don't know if this is still true, because I haven't been to Japan in, wow, a long time, over 10 years, I think. But the last time I went, which is a long time ago, it was very much a cash-based society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are very few places I could actually use my credit card. I mean, yeah, you could use it in, you know, stores and things, but other than that, and, you know, and you needed a kind of a special card for, what is it, for the rail. But it was very much a cash-based society. On the other hand, in the UK, when I was in Scotland and in England last year, you know, my credit card worked. Discover doesn't work there, by the way. It's pretty much a US-based card, but, you know, Visas and MasterCards and stuff work fine. And everybody accepted it, so it's not I didn't really need to carry much cash. So, I don't know. I don't know what I still have not used Apple Pay. I don't know if you use that at all, but
I use Apple Pay regularly when I'm at places that support Apple Pay, which is not as many as I'd like.
Right.
But I will say that I've not had a problem with Apple Pay like I have had with traditional credit cards.
Yeah.
So, and I also find them to be faster to accept when the reader, you know, the terms of swipe versus just tap, It's a lot quicker to just tap my phone on something or tap my watch on something.
So it authenticates faster? Or
I think so. Because it seems like it does.
The chip and pin or whatever the heck it's called. No, it's really not chip and pin here. It's just chip.
Yeah.
The chip and nothing in the U.S., it's really slow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is far slower to make a transaction using the chip and nothing than it is to swipe a card. I don't see how it's more secure, actually.
Well, and it's interesting. There are actually companies out there that or not companies, but retailers out there that will forego the security of the chip.
Yeah.
And they'll take the liability to enable them to keep using swipe because it's faster and customers complain about it less.
Yeah.
So I was reading an article a few months ago about companies basically saying, we'll put our neck out there. We know we can't file a claim if something is used, you know, improperly. Right. But it's a small risk to take to keep our customers happy because they're not taking forever to do a credit card process.
Yeah, I can see, especially in, you know, and I really don't know who uses chip and pin or chip and nothing in the U.S. versus the old-fashioned swipe. But I would think places like fast food outlets, food trucks, those kind of places where you need to move people.
Yeah.
It would be far faster to kind of pay the liability for swiping than just waiting for, you know, 10 times longer for a chip and nothing to authenticate.
Well, I think about the even in a restaurant where you've got a server swiping a card quickly, and then, you know, sort of everything being done is, you know, basically here's this table, here's the card, bam, done.
Yeah.
That takes maybe 5 seconds, 10 seconds for a waitress or a waiter that knows what they're doing. And with a chip and pin, it's going to add another 10 seconds onto that.
Oh, more than 10 seconds. Chip and nothing in the U.S. is unbelievably slow. I don't understand it at all. I don't know why we don't use chip and pin. I mean, yeah, it's one more thing to remember. But I'd feel if I'm going to be forced to use this slow system, I would rather be forced to also remember a second factor authentication than, to me, what doesn't seem any more secure than a swipe, from my point of view. I mean, you know, well, anyway. Well, it does mean that restaurants and places that would have to get new card readers because the if you use chip and pin, the wait persons, would not be able to take your card back to some unknown place and process it. They would have to do it at your table. You could press in your PIN.
Which is what they do more commonly in other countries.
Right.
You know, in Canada, when you go to a restaurant, they just bring the reader to you. And you punch it in. You put in how much tip you want to add on to it. And you're done.
Yeah. And in Japan, you just pay with cash, eliminating this whole problem. And
there
is no tip.
So. That would eliminate a great big problem in the world. So...
So they solve two problems at once. Okay, so that's actually it. It was a pretty short one this week. But I did want to mention that John and I, before the podcast was recording started, we were just talking about what's going on. And we noted that Microsoft's event is coming up soon, May 7th, I think. And also Google I.O. is 2 weeks after that, around May 17th or 18th. So perhaps we will be able to convince some of our friends to join us for a podcast and pontificate with us on whatever is announced. You looking forward to anything? And I'm hoping they announce, like, Microsoft announces a Surface Pro 5. And I'm hoping that Google announces a free phone for me because I'm still mad at them that my Nexus 6 can't be upgraded past 7.
I have nothing specific, but I'll also add that we're coming into this wonderful season of announcements because WWDC from Apple will be happening on June 5th to June 9th.
Wow. So within a period of a month, we'll have the big three.
I always joke that this is the most wonderful time of the year for a geek because you get to hear about things that hopefully will materialize by Christmas.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, it's kind of this begins the waiting and anticipating. When you were a kid and you waited, anticipated for August to, you know, December or November to December, now as a geek, you can anticipate from May to December hoping to get something.
I like that observation. And speaking of looking forward to things, a couple of minor items I wanted to note. Don't know. I think, John, you don't have a Starbucks near you, right, where you live. So
it's just 90 miles away.
Okay, so yeah. even by mainland terms, that's not near. Right? I'm just trying to.
Yeah, that is not near. But thankfully, everywhere I go has a Starbucks. It's just
not where you live.
I live doesn't have a Starbucks.
Well, yeah. The thing I wanted to mention is, you know, the Unicorn Frappuccino was released this past week. I guess it's only available for 5 days. I have not been able to find a place that has the you know, magical unicorn tears or whatever they need to make this available. So I know the two Starbucks I tried yesterday ran out, essentially. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And I don't know. I don't know what's going on, man. You know, and apparently baristas hate making it because it's really hard to make.
Well, I will just, on that note about that, my wife and one of my friends, who are both Harry Potter fans, found a meme that I thought was really interesting, and it was a picture of the unicorn Frappuccino, and it reads, "Do all these people drinking the new Starbucks unicorn frapp realize that they will have but a half life, a cursed life, from the moment the drink touches their lips? I hope it's worth it."
And I think Anthony Bourdain says something like, "It is the nexus of awfulness." But in any case, that brings to an end whatever the heck podcast this is. I forgot already. 203? I forgot.
Yep.
Mobile Views Podcast 203 is in the can. And as announcement season comes up, we're going to try to see if we can convince some of our friends to join us to pontificate on various topics. We'll look. If you have any questions for us, let us know.
Yeah.
How should they let us know? That's a good question. I'll set up an email address for them to send it to or something. But
you can always tweet us too.
Because I turned off comments on mobileviews.blog since most of it was spam, to be honest. I had once I got past a couple million spam, I said, yeah, it's enough. I think the ratio is low enough that I can turn it off. Okay, we will talk to you next time.